Welcome to another podcast here with me, Rich Martin. It's so good that we can be together again. Today, I have got a great conversation with a friend of mine, Charlie Burke. Charlie is an Australian who is doing an amazing work. He works for Exponential Australia, which is a network and church planting catalyst and a whole group of things it does. He touches on it on the podcast, which is great. And he's also planted Oak City Church with his wife in Sydney, Australia. They've got three beautiful children. And this conversation is one where Charlie unpacks all sorts to do with church planting, the dynamics around discipleship making and what that looks like, multiplication, how that works in the settings that he's in. I love this guy. I love what he's inputted into me over this last year. And so I was really, really keen to get him on here. So I know that you'll enjoy him as well. So let's jump straight into the conversation with Charlie Burke. Okay, it's great. I'm here with Charlie Burke. I think you're a friend. Is that right, Charlie? We can say friend.
I definitely consider us a friend, yeah.
Definitely. I met Charlie about a year ago in London. We were at a posh gathering, I'd say, Charlie, as well. That was quite nice. With loads of pastors from all over America and Australia. And so Charlie is doing amazing work, which I said at the beginning, all about what it is. And so thanks so much for being with us.
Rich, it's an absolute honor and a pleasure, and I'm humbled that you'd have me on your podcast, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, for me, it is 6:30 in the morning, and for you, it is 4, and so I appreciate that, but I'm so grateful you're on here as well. But can you give everyone a little bit of your backstory, how you've got to where you're at now, kind of whistle-stop tour of Charlie Burke?
Yeah, totally, Rich. So I put my trust in Jesus late in my high school years, didn't come from a non-Christian family. But quite radically, within the space of a couple of months, felt called to vocational ministry. And so that was a complete 180 from growing up. My family wanted what on earth had happened to me, but just had a real deep sense in my heart as I came to discover the wonders of following Jesus, that this was something I wanted to do career-wise, doing it to the best of my ability. And just always had a real strong sense that that's why God had put me on planet Earth, to kind of be part of building his church and connecting people. And so I have jumped around a variety of different church ministry roles. I guess the something of the typical trajectory: youth pastor, associate pastor, executive pastor. And then a number of years ago, 2018, as we were wrapping up in a ministry role, had a mentor figure of mine say to me, you should think about planting a church. At which point, both my wife and I said, no way, not interested, no thanks. But got the response of, at the very least, you should pray about it. And so classic Christian cliche, went on that journey, and God just arrested us for that. It was not something that was ever in our to-do list of life, our 10-year plan or anything like that. But just went on a journey of trying to sense God's will for the next season of our life. At that time, also was working with Alpha here in Australia, so I have a close connection with Alpha. So we planted the church that we now lead in 2019, which is, I know I'm kind of shortcutting a whole bunch of stuff here, Rich.
Yeah, including kids.
Yeah, that's right. There's kids in there. We've got three young kids. My wife and I have been married for 12 years now, 8-year-old, 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. But in and throughout all that, planting the church, now also working with an organization called Exponential, which effectively is trying to do all we can to stimulate, connect, and network the Australian church towards planting more churches. Much like Alpha, we're incredibly neutral and unified in the way that's done. We just want to see the Australian church do what it's called to do. And you know, we really don't care who gets the credit as long as Jesus is glorified. That's kind of our heart's motivation towards wanting to see more churches planted in our nation.
Wow. I mean, that was a whistle stop tour, by the way, and that was a good whistle stop tour. So you're like, you know Europe really well as well. I say really well. You've been over several times. You know, yeah, the people. I always think there's a good affinity between Australia and the UK, partly because of the banter, but you also understand cynicism and sarcasm, and so yeah. we're always on the same footing there. But talk us through your kind of viewpoint of planting church. What's working, what's not working? I mean, it's a monster question, but like, what are you seeing that's working in church planting with all your knowledge, and what's not working?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I definitely, I'd reciprocate that sentiment. I think Aussies and you Poms, we have a great connection. I'm actually ancestrally connected to Ireland as well. And so I feel like there's a huge, obviously given our colonial past. And so even an organization like Exponential that has actually come out of the US, I think we would very much look more to the UK by way of like a resonance in terms of culture. And you're right, there's that banter, there's that tall poppy syndrome.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that's a term that's used much in the UK.
Yeah.
You stick their head above the parapet, we cut them down, you know, and there is a degree of cynicism and sarcasm that comes with that. But actually, I think in many ways, what I've observed of the church in the UK is a church that's potentially even, you know, a decade ahead of us by way of secularization and some of the challenges that you guys have or are experiencing. And I know that would be different across the denominational spectrum and different cities and regions of the UK. But I think what we're observing here in Australia, and I say this very broad strokes, but I feel like the church in Australia, and maybe this is similar to the UK, is kind of falling within two categories at the moment. Those who are potentially just really fatigued and beaten up and tired by what the last couple of years has meant for the church, whether that be in a sense of caretaking, maybe some things that we need to let go, maybe some kind of failures that we've had to repent of or kind of recognize as maybe some things that we've been building upon shaky ground. But then there's this other part of the church that it feels like is very opportunistic in this moment, is actually sensing the incredible opportunities that the pandemic has brought about. And I think part of that has been because it's been one of the great equalizers. Like, it's actually caused the church to go, what are the things that are we going to prioritize in this season? And I'm sure it's probably pretty similar. We've realized that we've probably dropped the ball significantly on discipleship and what it means to be fully formed disciples and followers of Jesus. And part of that has also been the outworking of, you know, how is the everyday Joe Blow, someone who sits in the pews or sits in, you know, our Sunday gatherings, what does that actually mean for them on Monday? And how can they go on doing the things that, you know, the stuff that it says in the book, whether irrespective of their vocation,
right,
you know, or their family, like that's something that collectively the whole Church of Jesus Christ is invited to. And I think there's just been some confronting things that we've had to face as church leaders in this season. In terms of church planting, I think what we're experiencing here in Australia, and I can only speak to that, and I guess some of my more global experiences, is just like an energy around, and some of this has been catalyzed, like I say, because it feels like we've all been put in a sense back on even footing as to go, like some of the statistics here in Australia is that, you know, both at an all-time low in terms of church attendance, but also at an all-time high in terms of a misunderstanding of even who Jesus is. And so with the secularization that we're seeing in our nation, we're also seeing incredibly high statistics around the average punter in Australian society not even really knowing who Jesus is or what he's about. And so I think one of the challenges for the church is really it's got a bit of a PR problem. Like, if we're not communicating as accurately and to the best of our ability who Jesus is, that's what the church is meant to be, right? That's what we're called to portray to the world around us. And so we're seeing that the churches who, the church planters and the churches that are really wanting to do that to the best of their ability are doing creative things, innovative things. Listen, this is a very, this could sound like a negative thing to say, Rich, but I actually think that a lot of church planting sometimes can be quite boring. Like, I think that the churches that are prepared to give something a go and do something a bit out of the box are maybe experiencing a bit of a fresh wind, because They're committed to those who are not within their four walls. They're realizing that sometimes church planting is not just service planting. It's actually, what are you doing to genuinely rally a team of people who actually want to go and reach those who are outside the four walls of the church? And so, again, I'm giving you a bit more of a whistle stop here, but they're some of the things that I'm definitely observing within Australia at the moment.
I want to dig into it. It's a service planting, church planting. I'm part of a church that we've planted services before, planted services, started services before, and there's obviously a need because there's people there. So, but what you've planted Oak City Church in Sydney. Yeah. By the way, congratulations, you started it just before the pandemic. So I think you need one of those badges, one of those medals, you know, those war medals that people
made it. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, but what are the kind of hallmarks that you're finding of those that are flourishing, and what does flourishing look like? What, you know, and when often people, when hear flourishing, they hear bums on seats flourishing. Mm. What does flourishing look like in a church plant, and what is working? Just dig around those.
Totally. And coming back to that comment about service planting, and that's kind of, I guess, an axiom that I picked up off Tim Keller. He recently did an interview in the wake of the whole rise and fall of Mars Hill saga. And for those who have listened to that podcast, there was a number of bonus episodes that came out, and Tim was one of the interviewees on that. And he kind of spoke about this idea of genuine church planting is seeking to not just transplant a pre-existing group of Christians into another area, but actually go after those who are outside of the church. And if we were to do that, that actually takes, missiologically, that takes a lot longer.
Right.
It's far less sexy. It's far less Instagrammable. And hear me, I'm a huge fan of the worship service. You know, love worship very much. Bapticostal and expression, love the work of the Spirit, believe that as we gather, that's so significant. But it can't just be about shifting sheep around. It can't just be about trying to get sheep from somebody else's pen into yours, and that looks like a successful church plant. And so one of the other really exciting things that's happening here in Australia is kind of like this concept or this idea, and I'm sure it's pretty familiar in the UK too, because I'm sure many of you would have heard of the work of Mike Breen and building a discipling culture.
Yeah.
But what does it mean for a church, any given church, to actually build its culture around disciple making? And there's an Australian by the name of Steve Addison who kind of talked about this idea of, until discipleship or disciple making is like playing football, then it won't go viral. And his whole idea behind that is that the reason that football, we say soccer here in Australia, but the reason that football is the world game is because anyone can play it anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
You think about whether it's a can, whether it's a rolled up bit of newspaper, whether it's a deflated ball, you can play football anywhere. And it's like a common language of kids playing in the streets of Brazil, right? Anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And yet what has unfortunately sometimes happened in our churches is that we build this Sunday-centric mentality that only the superhero pastor can present the gospel and people will put their trust in Jesus. But actually, what would it look like if everyone who sat in the seats of our churches increasingly was growing in this idea of actually everybody gets to play. We're all part of this.
Wow.
And so I had to face the confronting reality as a church planter a couple of years ago of, I'd done several degrees in theology. I'd been around church ministry for a decade. But if you were to ask me how to actually kind of take a pre-Christian person on a journey towards putting their trust in Jesus, I would feel thoroughly uncomfortable. Like that's something that I wouldn't have known where to start. Of course, we've got great things out there like Alpha, but for someone who's maybe even so far away from potentially even a Christian worldview and exploring faith. And so I think genuine church plants that are thinking about how are they going to create disciples that are as committed on Monday than on Sunday, who actually have their eyes open for their neighborhood, their community. I think there's been this big swing back to the local in the pandemic too.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, yeah, I had a remarkable story recently, Rich, where as we've been on this journey and as I have had to confront some of those harsh truths in my life as a leader and kind of upskill myself in those areas by, you know, listen, Jesus modeled very practical, reproducible disciple-making principles to his disciples. And in fact, one of our favorite scriptures within the life of our faith community has been Acts chapter 4, verse 13, where Peter and John, they had performed their healing on the Sabbath, by which the religious elite were shocked and appalled. And but it says in Acts 4, 13 that they were blown away by these unschooled and ordinary men. And in fact, the Greek literally says agrammatos idiotes, which that's a pretty translatable word, right? They were idiots, yet they had been with Jesus. And I think, you know, my hope and prayer for the church, particularly in the West, is that there would be much more of those stories of very normal people rather than superheroes who had been with Jesus. And I got to go on this journey, particularly as we've been looking at some of this, and got to lead a fellow, you know, mate of mine towards faith in Jesus recently. And he was a guy who'd come from the local rugby club. I never, ever thought he would set foot in a church. Got to read the story of the prodigal son together. He got to realize, you know, God's love for him. And he's just messaged me today saying he wants to be baptized. So,
wow.
Quite the thing. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I just wanted to quickly pause this amazing conversation with Charlie and thank our partners, Compassion UK. Compassion are the most incredible charity that partner with many churches all over the world, but all throughout Europe as well. And I've had the privilege of going out to many of their projects, and so have so many of my good friends who run churches. And really, just hand on heart, the reason that so many people partner with Compassion is not because it's the cool, hip, in thing to do. It's because when you're building local church, you want to be able to resource your people or put people into contact with organizations that are actually going to do the work. And I can just say that Compassion are one of those organizations. When you see how they take our resources, our money and our time here in the West, and they partner it with children who find themselves in the most difficult situations, and that you get this great relationship going with your sponsor child and your project and with yourself in terms of being able to write, to be able to drop that into a church community that you're building and to be able to say, hey, why don't we lift our heads and think about the poor, the broken, and the least of these? And why don't we help disciple some people and help them in their way of being able to get water or food or clothing or medical care? Why don't we help from this side of the world? Compassion do it so, so well with great integrity. So I will encourage you to go and check out the Compassion website. It is www.compassionuk.org, and there's a whole lot of information on there. Don't just go and check it out because it's the in thing. Check it out because people partner with them, because what they do is truly, truly incredible. Right, let's jump straight back in to this brilliant conversation with Charlie.
And I mean, I could dig around this for a long time. We don't have a long time, but in terms of, you know, because I've heard this phrase loads, you know, we need to make disciples who make disciples, as if it's some sort of, you know, to do it 1, 2, 3, and then it's all kind of done, and then you package it up. And and then church leaders or people saying, we need to be people who make disciples that make disciples. My kind of issue with this, and unpick it for me and put me on a better footing if it's there, but my issue with the whole thing is I haven't yet found someone who knows what that is. And that's that's because it's like, let's take your rugby friend.
Yeah.
What discipleship making for him is looks very different to someone who's a prodigal, for example, or someone who has been brought up in the church. I don't know what his experience is, but I think like discipleship, as you tap into it on the ground or when you're doing it with people, like my friend is running a church, is setting up a church, and he was discipling someone in a pub the other day. And as he's discipling him, you know, he's just feeling his way around, getting into like, what does Christianity look like? I think it's for me. I've prayed. he gets a bag of Coke delivered to the table. And my friend's like, all right. And he kind of, the guy's like, nah, you know, gives an excuse of why it is. And, but you know, it doesn't add up, right? That doesn't look like Jesus discipling, right? And so what do you do? Walk away. This is totally wrong. In fact, yeah. It's illegal. Forget that. It's illegal what's just happened. Do you know, am I condoning this? So, yeah. But yeah, just unpack a little bit, because I think what I've been off put about before is this stuff is like, I don't know what people are on about when they say this, because everyone's, you know, we've had the G12 stuff, which said it was like a certain method. And there's a whole heap of good that came from that, and a whole heap of like people that have fallen out with Christendom because of it. And you realize that what, you know, how do we grapple with actually just on the ground doing it and working it out? Like, how have you done that in Oak City?
Yeah. It's good. And some of this may be a little bit above my pay grade, Rich, but I'll definitely give it a go.
Let's go there. It's always above my pay grade.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, one of the things that we as followers of Jesus have maybe fallen into the trap of thinking is that the Holy Spirit is only at work during our Sunday gatherings, you know, like, and I think, you know, this idea of preeminent grace, like God has gone before us, like he is already at work in the life of the bloke who's getting a bag of cocaine delivered to him. Mm. And actually the Holy Spirit is the original missionary, right? He is the one who is going before us. And I think where we've maybe tried to step ahead of the Holy Spirit is we think that that maybe we have to reach everyone rather than the one or two people that God has put in my life. Mm. And of course, one of the kind of turns of phrase that you're probably aware of is this idea of the person of peace. Mm. So like, you know, when Jesus told his disciples to go out, I think it was Mark or Matthew chapter 4. And he said, you know, go and find the person of peace in the village, like the person that God had prepared in advance. And one of the really easy ways we kind of, define that is someone who likes, listens, and serves you. Mm. You know, someone who, you know, I would almost say if you're moving house and it's the person you'd call up to help you load up the moving van, it's like that type of person, that pre-Christian person. And I think the danger that we sometimes also run is that we try and jump straight to, hey, do you want to come to church with me?
Right.
And that can be a very big step, right? And so we kind of talk about this idea of like the four corners of kind of progressing the relationship, for want of a better term. And of course, you know, we're not trying to commodify people or you know, we love them for who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But like we're trying to take the relationship from casual to meaningful to spiritual to kind of a revelation of Jesus. And so I think everyone, as you know, if you're a follower of Jesus, everyone can probably name two or three people like that in their world. Mm. And what has happened, I guess, in some of our churches is that we've kind of developed this culture of high on invitation and yet low on challenge when it comes to doing anything about it. By and large, as human beings, we don't really like being held accountable for anything. Mm. And so what we see in the disciple making of Jesus is that he was sitting with that bloke as he had cocaine delivered to him. You know, he was accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. He was that type of person who let anybody come to him. And yet still he was the one who said, go and sin no more. And he challenged his disciples. Like, you know, you look at some of the situations that he threw his disciples into, you know, it was, some of them were sink or swim. Mm. And so I guess for us in our kind of pursuit of that, and we definitely, this is not a silver bullet. We don't have it right. We're 3 years into a church planting journey, of which the last two have been gravely affected by a global pandemic, but it's trying to get those, and it's going to be a small percentage of people, you know, just like, you know, Jesus' analogy of the yeast and the dough, like not everyone's going to kind of buy into this, but it's trying to, those people are saying, yes, I do want to kind of go on this journey of which I'm prepared to be held accountable. This building a discipling culture process that I've talked about before we just have a fortnightly Zoom where we just ask ourselves one another question, you know, where's the Holy Spirit been at work and what have you been doing about it? It's simple, wow, basic obedience. Like, wow, it's sometimes we really make it a lot more complicated. And of course, you know, we have our great Sunday gatherings and you know, but we're really, for those who are going on that journey of being like, I want to be part of what God's doing in my world. And we want to multiply those clusters and we want to see that become part of the culture of who we are as a church.
Wow.
There would be some who would be prepared to go on that journey.
What are those Zooms like?
Mate, until recently, it's been great because it's been an outside party holding people to account. But now as the pastor, I'm the one who has to do it. But there's been plenty as well where I know I'm about to have to jump on Zoom and go, I've not done anything in the last 2 weeks, you know, and even as a Christian leader to kind of, realize that maybe I've kind of not been, I don't want to use the term up to scratch, but maybe I haven't been even putting it into practice this fortnight.
Wow. I mean, I've never heard anyone do that. That's such a great thought. Like in October last year, I confessed my sins daily for a month with two of my friends. On a similar principle of like how, and we still do that. We still keep it up. In fact, we were talking, we need to get back onto it. We'd done it for years previous, but we wanted to see what if we did it every single day for the whole month of October. And so it was fascinating journey, but a similar kind of accountability thing that led us on a great journey. And so what does the expression then look like, you know, kind of these discipleship making movements that you're talking about of where people are planting churches? Do they all look like, you know, in your work, you meet on a Sunday, but do they all have to meet on a Sunday? Do they all have to follow that model? Do they meet differently? What can that expression of the gathered group of people look like?
Yeah, and I'm probably speaking a bit more to our church planting journey. The joy of my role with Exponential is that we are trying to champion all forms of church planting because we know that when there is a maturity and blended economy in church planting, that's going to reach as many people as possible. Mm. And so the joy that I have of working with Exponential is that we're trying to cheer on the mega church. We're trying to cheer on the house church. We're trying to say any methodology of church planting that is seeking to reach new people. We did some research prior to the pandemic here in Australia that told us that only 2% of the Australian church is actively seeking to multiply itself. Mm. So Exponential is primarily concerned with that 2% number. We want to see that 2% number increase. And I would hazard a guess that through the pandemic, that maybe that number even halved. You know, like I don't imagine there was a huge amount of churches being planted in the pandemic. And so we're concerned with that 2% number. We want to see that grow to 5%, 10%. One day, if that reached that heralded 16% tipping point number that I'm sure you're probably familiar with, Malcolm Gladwell, if we reach 16%, we would consider our job done because that's when multiplication would have really taken off within the Australian church. And we think that if that were to happen, then the nation of Australia would feel it. And so, the great joy that I have in that is that effectively I'm trying to broker church planting. I'm trying to just work with the Australian church and remind the Australian church what it's called to and making disciples and planting churches. And I get the great joy of doing that because I'm not there as a salesperson. I'm just there as the head cheerleader of sorts.
And in that, just a kind of like, have you got any people that are doing things that are pretty different and it's working? But when I mean different, I mean the traditional model is you meet Sunday morning, 10:30, you do three songs, bit of worship, someone preaches, you finish, you collect your kids. If there's 20 of you in a room or if there's 2,000 in your room, that's the kind of like, that's it done. And then the stuff we've talked about previously is the stuff of the kind of cultural stuff. How do we build that into the people? Is there anyone doing it differently? Like it's working for them. They're meeting in pubs, they're meeting in, they're doing it differently.
Yeah, listen, I think, and my great prayer and hope would be that there are much more creative expressions that begin to come, because I think my comment before, and again, this is not to be disparaging of the Aussie church at all, but some of it can be very conventional. And that's for a reason, because we know there are effective models of planting churches. And just to encourage your listeners from the UK, like I think we're taking a lot of our prompts from you guys. Like I think quite genuinely what I have been able to observe in that trip to London that we first connected, Rich, and some of the amazing things that you guys are doing around entrepreneurialism and kind of some of the great things that I observed on that trip through the likes of like Rick Thorpe and others like that, who are just, they're ripping the lid off any kind of glass ceilings we may have had. I do think, and we've been quite fortunate that in a way, unlike in my recent experiences of church planting, there is also, it feels like every denomination in Australia has realized, because of the underbelly of what we've experienced in the last couple of years, the great need to plant more churches. Mm. And so I think there is more finance and resourcing made available to church planting than I've seen in my time through the denominations. And so people are realizing that if we're not multiplying and planting churches, then we are on the decline, and there's that great need to do that. But I feel like what has also changed as well, Rich, is there seems to be something of a mentality shift that's occurred. Hmm. You know, and I think for me, growing up in ministry the last 15 years, there was almost this sense in which if I could just climb up the ranks of that church and reach a certain leadership role in the future, that will be ministry success. But I feel like there is something of a shifting of the narrative around ministry success at the moment, that actually being courageous and going to plant your own church, if the Lord prompts you to do that, calls you to do that, that actually, like, that's obedience.
Yeah.
And so I know I'm speaking a little bit in generics and vagaries here, but it's like I feel like there is a new generation of younger leaders here in Australia that are going, of course, we thank the Lord for all that he's done in previous expressions of church here in Australia, but we also want to plant new things and do things that are out of the box. And surprisingly enough, some of the churches that did launch in the pandemic that obviously had a real digital focus are doing really well. There's a church in Perth that has launched right in the middle of the pandemic and doing amazing things. And there are other churches on the East Coast in cities like Brisbane, where there are some incredible, largely sometimes leaders who have been in maybe more. So I think of one leader who has been in Japan for the last 10 years, and that way of thinking has been ingrained in him for the last 10 years, because Japan as a nation is a highly secular nation. And therefore to think missionally about how you're going to reach people is a top order priority.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why he's starting to have a lot of traction here in Australia is because he's thinking that way, but in a Western context.
Wow. Wow. What's his name?
Luke Kennedy. He leads a church called Future Church.
Oh, great. Last question, and we're out of time. Someone's listening to this and thinks, I think I'd love to be involved in church planting, or I'd like to plant a church. What's your top tips?
Yeah, listen, as much as it's a bit antithetical to what I've just been saying, like the call of God on your life is so significant. And I once remember having a conversation with Mike Pilavachi, and this was prior to us planting our church. And I asked him, what's your top tip? And his response was, don't do it. In a classic Mike Pilavachi tone.
Yeah.
But really what he was trying to communicate in that is that unless God has called you to do it, there's obviously a cost. You know, Jesus tells us to count the cost. Of course, in my role with Exponential and as a fellow church planter, I'm doing all I can to prayerfully stimulate and motivate more churches to be planted. But there is a huge cost of planting churches. And I would say from my experiences, the work that the Lord has done within me, even more than what he has done through me, has been far more significant. You know, to face the shadow side of my own leadership, to realize that maybe I wasn't as good as I thought I was. I definitely wasn't as humble as I should be. And so that inner work of the church planter is so significant, and it will bleed into everything. It will bleed into your marriage. It will bleed into your own devotional life with the Lord. Mm. you know, as much as I am so encouraging and endorsing of apostolic leadership, of taking new ground, you also, this is a line that I picked up from a friend of mine, you also want to achieve your goals without losing your soul. And so, like, making sure that your soul is healthy. And of course, that's always a continuum and we go back and forth, but that inner life of the leader is just so significant. And
amazing.
As we've seen in the last couple of years, it'll cause you to come undone if it's not a priority.
Oh, Charlie, I'm so grateful for meeting you in London and thanks so much for jumping on here. How do people find out about Oak City Church and Exponential in Australia?
Yeah, sure. You could jump onto both websites, exponential.org.au. And of course, there is an expression in the UK and in Europe as well, if they wanted to connect more. And the annual Exponential Conference is held in Orlando, Florida, every March. You'd be more than welcome to come and join us for that. But Oak City Church as well is just oakcitychurch.com.au. And you can also find me at Charlie_Burke on Instagram as well. Would love to connect further if people wanted to do that. But for me, it's just been a tremendous honor to be with you, Rich. Thanks so much for inviting me.
So good. Thanks so much, Charlie.
What great insights there from Charlie, and so good that he was able to unpack his version and his experience of being able to plant church. I really hope it's inspired you. Look, I'm doing this not because I've got nothing else to do. I'm doing it because I love these conversations. And so please, if you want to share it or leave a comment or like it on Apple Podcasts or whatever it might be, I'd be hugely appreciative. Look, thanks so much for listening, and go and have a great rest of your week.